Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMC ortho.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Box Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show, Medical Monday. I'm Alan Shartok. There have been some major advances in radiation therapies as a treatment for malignancies in the last few decades. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Arcil De Jesus, a radiation oncologist with New York Oncology Hematology here in the Capital Region. Dr. De Jesus received her bachelor's and medical degrees from the University of Philippines in Manila. She completed her internship at Union Memorial College in Baltimore, Maryland, and her residency at Howard University Hospital in Washington, D.C. Dr. De Jesus serves as chair of the Maintenance of Certification Task Force of U.S. Oncology and is a member of U.S. Oncology's Radiation Oncology Quality Assurance Committee. Dr. De Jesus specializes in a range of cancer treatments, including stereotactic radiosurgery, 3D conformal radiation therapy, intensity modulated radiation therapy, and image-guided radiation therapy. Dr. De Jesus, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, your father was a noted radiation oncologist too. Have things changed that much since that time?
Much so. Actually, the last two or three decades has shown an immense improvement in the technology that we have for not only the diagnosing of cancer, but also in particular the use of radiation in the treatment of malignancies. A lot of the improvement has come from the ability to match imaging before and prior to treatment that has allowed us to become more specific, more conformal, more accurate in the delivery of the treatment.
So what does that mean? I'm sorry, I'm sort of having trouble keeping up. So you do an image, then you do the surgery. So you use the original image in order to guide you with what comes next.
You got it. A lot of radiation is image-based. So, for example, the process starts off with first determining that the patient requires radiation or would benefit from the radiation. We use imaging, such as CT scanning, to identify where exactly the cancer is. So let's say the cancer is in the left lung, the upper lobe. Now we take that image, we then identify the spot where the cancer is. We will put, during the initial simulation or mapping session, we will put marks on the skin that correlates with the spot of that cancer. Then we use those images to create a treatment plan that is conformal, delivering radiation just to that spot and trying to avoid all the other structures around it, such as the heart, the spinal cord, the esophagus, to minimize the side effects. Now, during treatment, just right before treatment, we take most likely an X-ray that will help us match how the initial image looked and how it looks prior to treatment that day. So, for example, if the patient was off a few millimeters left to right, up, down, anterior to posterior, that table is adjusted so that the position of the patient matches exactly how it was planned. That allows the accuracy to be within a few millimeters. Now, what does that mean? By becoming more conformal and more accurate, that allows us, number one, to deliver higher doses of radiation safely. That allows us to hopefully increase local control. But also, number two, by minimizing the amount of margin that we need to put around that tumor, it allows us to avoid the adjacent critical structure. See, the cancer is right beside normal tissue. And if we take too much normal tissue around it to envelop that cancer in the treatment field, then that then causes a lot of side effects. So the less amount of normal tissue that is within our treatment field, we are able to then minimize the amount of side effects. So imaging is key here.
So are we seeing outcomes considerably different than what we saw before all of this began?
Yes, I think we have seen not only an improvement in local control, but also with the With the vast improvement in the chemotherapeutic drugs and now also the immunologic drugs, we've seen people live with cancer rather than die of cancer. So yes, there has been an improvement in survival rates and local control rates with the technology and with the drugs that have been discovered in the past few decades.
So in some cases, there's always a debate, particularly in at least one men's surgery, as to whether to have an operation or whether to do radiation. What are we learning now?
If the data has shown there's really equivalent results with either surgery or radiation, the decision making comes with looking at the whole patient. As I always say, the cancer comes in a package, and it is when you are looking at the entire package. How old is that patient? Does he have diabetes, heart disease, any other comorbidities that make one treatment over the other better or at least more appropriate? So usually the toss-up is between surgery and radiation. For most cases, surgery would be the gold standard, say for prostate cancer. But you really can't push surgery or a prostatectomy for early stage prostate cancer in a patient who is in his 80s, who has, you know, really bad chronic lung disease, is oxygen dependent, or has bad diabetes, or has a bad heart. I'm quite sure his physician won't let him get on that operating table. So you have to have an alternative that has good track record, good results as well, but is not invasive and does not require that risk of surgery.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I know you're hearing a brilliant, brilliant young woman and excellent doctor, and you're going to kick yourself if this show is over and you haven't asked the question you think you should have. Oh, I should have asked her, but I didn't. I was nervous. I didn't want to call. But of course, I'm telling you, Dr. De Jesus, I'm telling you that by the end of this, the lines will be jammed, and everybody who has a chance now will not have asked their question. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Well, you know, this is remarkable stuff, and when you look at the way in which this is all sort of developing, you know, it's all very good. But as a physician, I'm going to ask you a question, and I don't want you to be insulted by it. But it's always concerned to me that when somebody has these methodologies, do you care about your patients? That's my question. When they come in and they look at you and they've got cancer, what happens to your heart?
I personally do not separate mind and heart. I cannot treat without caring. The person is coming in not as a cancer, but as a person. The cancer just happens to be part of that person. So as I said, you have to look at the total package. I still believe that a lot of medicine is about the healing, the art. And I think that that is what a lot of physicians nowadays forget. They are all concerned about science, this, medication, that. They forget that touch is very healing. Talking and listening is very healing. And so, yes, I, you know, unfortunately, I'm one of those that can't separate the feeling part. My patients are...
Did you say fortunately or unfortunately?
I'd say fortunately.
You bet.
I think that if I that makes me a different person if I separate those two things. And I think I am most effective if I, you know, somehow am able to merge that but not be overwhelmed by that.
Okay. Well, doctor, we're going to take a short break. All five phones are now ringing. So we'll be right back. Just one second.
Support comes from the Urgent Care Centers of Middletown Medical, providing walk-in medical care with no appointment, daytime, evening, and weekend hours in Middletown, Ellenville, and now in Chester. MiddletownMedical.com. Gordon Fire Equipment, offering fire extinguisher service and inspections to businesses and organizations in the Hudson Valley. Family-owned since 1956. GordonFire.com. Utica College, offering a Master of Science degree in Healthcare Administration online. Utica.edu. And Old Songs Concerts, Voorheesville, New York, presenting Brothers Son Folk Trio featuring Americana, blues, and a cappella singing. this Saturday at 8 p.m., oldsongsconcerts.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back with our wonderful doctor, Dr. De Jesus, the phones are ringing. There's one free phone right now. Nope, there are no free phones. Let's go to Mike in Cornwall. Okay, Mike, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm calling about a friend. I am his proxy / surrogate. He's 66 years old, has no one else, no family, no one. His English is very poor, so thus I've gone with him too. In any case, long story short, they found cancer in the prostate, and the doctor or some doctors have used various terms, a spot, a lesion, a mass, and sometimes some other term. So at the initial exam, he was told he has to have a colonoscopy, he has to have an MRI, CAT scan, he had all of that. During the process of having these tests, they found a mass it was benign, they think, the colon. It is being now scheduled and to be taken out. It's on the upper colon on the right side. Okay.
Hey, Mike. I the last thing I want to do is rush anybody, but you got a full bank of phones behind you. So,
yes.
So what's
okay,
the
I'm
question?
I'm going to end this quickly. I asked the doctor, is he a candidate for radiation seeding? No. Is he a candidate for prostatectomy? No. My question, he's having hormonal shots is his procedure right now from what he has.
Mm-hmm.
Is this common? Do you see this often? Or that's my question. I'll be quiet.
Okay, go ahead.
Mike, thank you for the question. Prostate cancer is the most common cancer diagnosed in men nowadays, and fortunately, a lot of it is actually caught quite early. So my question is, the treatment recommendations depend on the stage. Certainly, if they said, and also any other medical problems that he has. So I'm wondering if they mentioned, what is the stage of his cancer? I don't think the colon lesion most likely is not related. It's probably a benign thing. So if we put that aside, did they mention what stage he has?
He did not.
That would be the first question.
But it does sound, doctor, as if it's a later stage. Because if the question was, can you do the seeds or can you do the operation? And the answer is neither. It sounds like a later stage to me, doesn't it?
It sure does. But, there was not any mention of any bone scan showing disease outside into the bones, any mention of any lymph nodes involved. Let's assume that he does have later stage disease. In that case, he certainly would not really be an ideal candidate for surgery or a seed implant, because that would be only specific to the prostate. In later stage disease, there's a risk that this cancer has spread beyond the prostate and needs to cover a larger area. So in that case, most likely the hormone treatment is meant to reduce the amount of testosterone that they feel is feeding into the cancer, trying to weaken the cancer cells. And hence, the other question would be, what would be most applicable in terms of treatment? I'm going to assume he's probably going to be more of a candidate for standard external beam radiation, which would mean using a machine directed to the pelvic area where the prostate is and giving radiation on a daily basis to attempt to kill the cancer that way.
That could be. I don't know that yet.
Okay, Mike, I thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Okay, let's go to Carl in Palatine. Okay, Carl, you're on.
Hello, thank you for this very fine program. I'm a patient with cancer, ear, nose, and throat. Forget the ear, nose, and throat, very heavy. I was already med, had heavy surgery to remove a considerable amount of the upper palate and down to the throat and whatnot, and the nasal area. They then recommended, strongly urged me, and I was very hesitant, to take chemotherapy and radiation together. As I went to a different place to take that, I'm thinking of what your guest doctor said about the importance of imaging. Well, it was pointed out to me that the imaging, that it's very difficult to detect early cancer in the body, and that therefore they'll go, and this was a chemotherapist talking, but said it applied to radiology, radiation, that it's very difficult to detect this early on, so that they have to kill cells. Some of those cells, sometimes most of them, are good non-metastasized cells. So my question is, having had PET scans, having had daily CT scans for 5 days a week, 6 weeks, it's my understanding from both doctors that they were actually killing a bunch of good cells, and I'm living with the consequences, with the ramifications of those 6 weeks of radiation now.
Okay, Carl.
I was told, yes, sir.
Carl, I'm going to cut you off because, again, there are a lot of people behind you.
Yes, sir.
Let's see if the doctor has some response to this.
Oftentimes, chemotherapy and radiation is recommended after surgery if there is a risk for microscopic disease left behind after the surgery. So indeed, chemotherapy, surgery, radiation kills both good cells and bad. However, the difference between a normal cell and a cancer cell is the fact that normal cells are able to repair themselves while cancer cells don't. But certainly, because of the treatment, daily treatment that occurs, then you certainly will have the side effects. I don't know the details of your cancer to say that, yes, it was appropriate to do the chemotherapy and radiation. I'm going to assume that there was an increased risk for microscopic disease. That's why they recommended chemotherapy and radiation. I do recognize that it kills both good and bad cells. However, the problem is you can't see just a few amount. There's no imaging study or blood work in existence to this day that is able to detect a single cancer cell. So we have to read from the pathology and have to read from previous imaging what your risk of harboring microscopic disease is and go from there in terms of recommending what adjuvant therapy or additional treatment is required after surgery.
Thank you, Carl. Appreciate your call.
Thank you both.
Yeah. Let's go to Chris in Adams, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on.
Hello. I completed 20 radiation treatments in mid-July of this year after having a course of chemotherapy and lumpectomy and lymph node removal. I had two chains of lymph nodes removed, and there was a 9 of 21 involved. That all went fine, and about a month and a half ago, I developed quite a lot of swelling in the breast, and I have seen my surgeon, and she felt that it was probably due to lymph fluid. Is that something that the radiation would cause to happen? And, you know, have you any experience with this?
Yes, definitely. The entity you're talking about is called lymphedema. Women who undergo a lymph node dissection, taking out, you know, an average of 10 or more nodes, and also receives chemotherapy and likewise receives radiation to the lymph node region in that side of the breast, are at increased risk of developing lymphedema, which is pretty much a chronic disease wherein your lymph nodes no longer function in dealing with the excess body fluid. So my recommendation would be probably to be evaluated by a physical therapist who specializes in lymphedema management, to evaluate you and see if there's any role for manual lymph drainage massage or any compression garments that can help alleviate that. So yes, it is a product of both, the lymph node dissection and the previous radiation, most likely.
Okay. Well, I have done the compression treatments with the therapist, and I'm doing all that right now. Okay.
Well, Chris, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. There are now three free phones. So if you want to do it, do it now. We did Chris. She's still up there. I see. Okay, we'll go to Raphael in Hartford, Connecticut. Or is it Raphael?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
Thanks so much.
Sure.
My wife, she was dealing with breast cancer. Was a pretty aggressive type. So, but fortunately it was ERPR negative. So they had her on a chemotherapy that was targeted to, I guess, kill the cancer and block the cells from replicating. When they did the mastectomy, they found on the pathology that she had a complete response. So right now we're in that situation where there's only 10% of patients that have a complete response with the chemotherapy. And we're still kind of trying to figure out if she should undergo through radiation or not.
So let me stop you right there and ask the doctor a definitional question. So when Raphael says a complete response, he means, quote, they got it all.
No, basically what he would mean is that I'm assuming your wife has locally advanced or it may be inflammatory breast cancer. And typically in those cases, they don't immediately do surgery. They would give chemotherapy to, shrink the cancer, try to get rid of the cancer in the lymph nodes. And a complete response means that prior to surgery, there was a mass, there were lymph nodes involved. And then at surgery, the examination of the specimen shows no residual cancer. That's a complete pathologic response to treatment. So now, Raphael, the recommendations in terms of using radiation after surgery in patients who receive chemotherapy prior to a mastectomy actually rely on their clinical stage at initial presentation and not how they responded afterwards. So, for example, if your wife had a large tumor, usually greater than 5 centimeters in size, was either on imaging, demonstrating invasion into the chest wall or the skin, if there was at least, large lymph nodes in the armpit that either was biopsied and proven to be positive or lit up on a PET scan, those I would assume, if they were positive, she certainly would benefit from radiation therapy to the chest wall and regional lymph nodes after surgery.
Thank you. Yeah, then she did have positive scans of lymph nodes, and it was pretty aggressive. I think it was about, there were three places in the breast where there were cancer interconnected, and it was over 5 centimeters.
Raphael, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it very
much.
Thanks again. Okay, let's go to Carol in Woodstock. Carol, you're on.
Oh, did you say Ellen?
No, I said Carol. Are you Carol?
Oh, but you're talking to me, and I'm Ellen, so maybe that's close enough.
Well,
okay?
I don't see Ellen's up. I don't see Ellen's up on the board.
Oh, but, so maybe it didn't come clear to
okay, but that's
I'm
okay. That's
much.
Okay. Fine, Ellen. It doesn't matter whether your name is Carol or Ellen. Go ahead.
Thank you. It's regarding lymphedema. After radiation, the lymphedema got worse. Is it possible that the lymph nodes that might have been injured by the radiation in the pelvic area could heal and the lymphedema get better? And then my other question is, what's the difference in a follow-up scan to see if you have a recurrence between a PET scan and a CAT scan?
Okay. With regards to the lymphedema question, Yes, the function of the lymph nodes may still improve over time, but certainly if your lymphedema has been pretty stable in terms of its level of severity, 3 to 6 months out from radiation, I think that would be as best as it can be. Now, with regards to the difference between a CAT scan and a PET scan, as I always tell my patients, the easy analogy would be a CAT scan shows is like a black and white photo. And the only way we know that something is abnormal in general is that either it's too big or it's larger than what is normal, or that something appears on the right side that is not on the left side, or something appears where it's not supposed to be. However, not everything big is cancer, and not everything small does not have cancer. So the difference between a PET scan, which is which utilizes a radioactive substance, that is where a sugar molecule or a glucose molecule is attached to it, this molecule goes to areas where there is active metabolism, where cancer is. So even in areas where it doesn't appear enlarged on a CAT scan, the dye accumulates in that area and shows us where the cancer is. So PET scan is a metabolic scan. It allows us to identify areas where cancer is, even if they are not enlarged or appear abnormal on a CAT scan.
So why do we do CAT scans? Why do we do CAT scans as opposed to the others?
I would say the CAT scan would be our first line, the first thing that we would do, because you wouldn't want to expose just anybody and everybody to radioactivity if it's not necessary.
I get it. Okay, go ahead, Carol.
Does the grade of the original cancer show up differently in a CAT scan? Like if it's grade one, since it's more normal looking, does it not show up as well? And the other part of that is, does the grade change in a recurrence, or is it always the same grade?
The grade is based on how it appears on the pathology, how the tissue appears. So that doesn't there's no different appearance on a CAT scan.
Carol, we're going to let you go because, again, I want to let everybody in. Thank you so much. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Joanne in Kingston. Joanne, you're on.
Yes, hello. My name is Joanne. I'm 64, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer in my left breast last December. And I think you should also do a service to consider alternative therapies. I used laser immunotherapy. It's a new experimental treatment. It's not allowed in this country because no FDA approval. A year later, I had no radiation, no chemotherapy, no surgery. I had this treatment which uses laser beams, a photosynthesizer, and an immune system booster. I had several treatments, and it's gone.
Okay, Joanne.
So I would like you to check into this laser immunotherapy that's being done by a group called the Integral Strategic Cancer Alliance.
Okay,
and
it's
known in all cancer journals.
Joelle.
And it's written up in the November 2012 Life Extension Magazine.
Okay, Joelle.
It's totally gone.
Okay, and you're gone too. Thank you, Joelle. Okay, and let's go to John in Del Mar. John, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I wonder if you recommend any routine tests or screenings. I'm 72. My mother died of lung cancer. She was 89. My sister had lung cancer when she was 77.
Thank you. As I always say, screening is excellent in identifying cancers. So for men, I would say screening would be a PSA starting at age 50 or earlier if you have family history of prostate cancer. Colonoscopy is also key in detecting early stage colon and rectal cancer. So if you are above 50 or if you have a family history of colorectal cancer, certainly definitely must have a colonoscopy. If you are a smoker...
Every 5 years?
It really depends on what they find at that baseline screening colonoscopy. The recommendations would depend on what they find. If you are a smoker, have been a smoker, have had exposure to secondhand smoke, talk to your physician. There certainly is a role for low-dose CT screening in high-risk patients for the early detection of lung cancer as well.
What was that again? Low-dose CT?
Low-dose CT screening for the detection of lung cancer in high-risk patients.
Are you a smoker, John?
I quit 20 years ago.
I would say that if you have a certain amount of smoking history, talk to your primary care physician and tell them your concerns, and certainly they can look into the role of low-dose CT screening for you.
CT means CAT scan?
Yes.
CAT scan, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Okay, bye.
All right, let's go to Amy in Stone Ridge. Hi, Amy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple of questions. I'm a massage therapist, and I see, I have clients who have...
Hey, Amy,
yes.
We're up against... Yes, but we're up against a really hard break, so I'm going to ask you to stay on the phone, and we'll be right back with you, okay?
Okay.
Support comes from New York Oncology Hematology, offering clinical research trials towards FDA approval of anti-cancer drugs. When experience matters most, NewYorkOncology.com for a list of clinical trials. Miss Hall's School, a boarding and day school in the Berkshires for grades 9 through 12 and a postgraduate year. Open house November 11th. What girls have in mind, MissHalls.org. Nathan Letower Hospital, Gloversville, New York. Less than 50 minutes from the Capital District, offering minimally invasive procedures for back pain with Dr. Ja'an Shen, NLH.org. And John Keel Music, hosting a band instrument fair with demos from Yamaha, Con Selmer, Buffett, Jupiter, and more. November 15th, 10 to 3 at Proctor's Theater, johnkeelmusic.com.
And we are back, and I take it, Amy, you're still there, right?
I am still here.
Let's start from the beginning, Amy, and my apologies. I should have been more aware.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions. One is, what recommendations do you have for people who have had lymph nodes removed so that they, hopefully do not get lymphedema?
I would say that it really depends on the amount of lymph nodes that were removed. Right now with breast cancer or in a lot of cancers, we're only doing sentinel node biopsies, wherein only a few lymph nodes are removed and no longer the 10, 15, 20 plus lymph nodes that were being removed before. So the risk for lymphedema in these less invasive, less radical surgeries have decreased. But as I always say, prevention is best. So in patients that I know that are at increased risk of potentially getting lymphedema, I usually send them for lymphedema education and potentially management as needed.
So let me see. Amy, hold on one second. So this is very interesting because we talked about lymphedema several times during the program. I'm beginning to get the picture a little bit more than I understood it before. So that if you've had the lymph nodes removed, you are now at risk for lymphedema. Is that right, doctor?
Correct.
Okay. And what is lymphedema?
Lymphedema is on and off chronic swelling of the limbs or a certain portion of the body. So if, for example, in breast cancer, where if it's locally advanced and they take out a lot of lymph nodes from the armpit, the upper arm of the affected side tends to be swollen and the excess water tends to be stagnant in that arm.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to work at finding alternative means of moving that stagnant excess water out of that arm back into the heart where it can be processed.
And how do they do
processed.
That?
Amy can tell you, but basically they do manual lymph drainage massage. They use compression garments. They use certain compression devices.
Gotcha.
So on and so forth.
Yeah. Okay, Amy, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. So I'm not trained in manual lymph drainage massage, but I do tend to stay away from the affected arm or side. And should I still be doing that even if only one or two lymph nodes have been removed?
I don't think that if only a few lymph nodes are removed that they would be at high risk for doing lymphedema. So if you're doing a massage therapy for other reasons and they are not on active treatment, meaning they're not actively receiving radiation or are just very far out from surgery, I think it shouldn't be an issue or a problem.
Okay. Amy,
thank you.
Thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
Great. Bye-bye.
We've got three free phones now, folks. Now's the time to get online. Let's go to Dane in Beacon. Okay, Dane, you're back. Go ahead.
It's Dane. I have a question about, I'm 68 years old, and I've had no cancer really in my family, but are there any techniques where you can be, besides a colonoscopy and that sort of thing, which I do have done fairly regularly, are there other diagnostic techniques coming along that can tell you if you're going to get cancer or you're subject to it, or like for lung cancer or someplace else? I'm fairly healthy and I don't have any trouble with it, but I just wondered if there's anything coming along that we should use as analytical tool.
Dane, I wish there was, but to this day, there's not really a specific blood test that detects single cancer cells floating around, and I think it would not really be advantageous or safe to be doing a PET scan on every single person. You still have to go back to just talking to your doctor and doing a good history and physical and looking at family history and risk factors and environmental factors and habits that can then increase your risk for developing certain cancers. And from there, do the appropriate testing. Right now, the screening studies that we have are mammograms for breast cancer, pap smears for cervical cancer, low-dose CT screening for lung cancer, PSA blood test for prostate cancer, and as I said, colonoscopies for colorectal cancer. All the other cancers, unfortunately, are based on a good history and physical. We can't really detect them before they start having some symptoms.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome.
Yep, bye-bye. That leaves four free phones now, folks. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Jeff in Crumbsville. Okay, Jeff, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to call and share my experience being treated for prostate cancer recently. I'm 67, and when I became eligible for Medicare, I had, a physical, and my PSA numbers were high. And to get to the point, the treatment available, I live in the Ulster County area, and the treatment available in my HMO supplemental area was, I have to say, 10 or 15 years behind where I found out that I wanted to go, which was Sloan Kettering. I went to a hospital in Kingston and was, everybody was sympathetic. I have the utmost respect for everybody I was in contact with. But the treatment was 43 treatments. With a fixed beam on a table that moved. And, doing a little bit of research, I found out that the SRS involved a more hemispherical beam, much more precise. And I went down to Sloan and had five treatments as per their diagnosis. And, I just have to comment that, the best of treatment is available not far away, but is unavailable to many, many people.
Okay, now let's leave it at that. Sure. Go ahead, and doctor, and react to that.
Certainly, with prostate cancer, there are different ways of doing the radiation. I'm saying that, yes, definitely Sloan Kettering is an excellent place to go to, but and not because I'm part of New York Oncology, but we also offer state-of-the-art treatments for prostate cancer in terms of using ARC therapy as well as daily imaging with a CT to make sure that we are accurate and precise in delivering the beam. So certainly something is, still close. Very close to home that we can provide the treatment, and not everybody has to go to Sloan or Dana-Farber or those tertiary cancer centers.
But could I be treated with five instead of 43 treatments?
Did they say, I have, that there's so many different details I would have to know about your particular cancer to say yay or nay. So I would defer on not answering that air because I really don't know the details of your malignancy, and I don't want to be unfair and miseducate.
Okay.
No, of course not. I'm just assuming that each doctor had a similar diagnosis. And the side of the coin is I had a months-long fight, you know, several months with my HMO to get approval to go out of network. And again, I go back to, you know, the best treatment available should be available, you know, without restricting people.
Jeff, yep. You've made that clear, and we appreciate the call. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Right. Let's go to Ed in Stone Ridge. Ed, you're on.
Hello?
Ed, you're on.
Yes. Somebody called a little while ago inquiring about a laser immunotherapy that's offered only in the Bahamas, and it worked for her, and it speaks to the corruption of the $100 billion cancer industry in this country that they don't allow therapy
it's
and I'm wondering why you're doing the same thing to me.
Yes, I am.
And
I'm about
not
to,
immediately went to another caller so that the guest did not even have a chance
to
answer
Ed on
the
that
question.
List. Thank you, Ed.
I think it's a legitimate...
Okay, let's go to John in Rexford. John, you're on. John, you're on. Hello, John. John? John, are you there? I can't hear. I hear something in the background, but not much. Okay, thanks, John. All right, let's go to Marie in Highland. Marie, you're on.
Yes, I had a mastectomy 2 years ago, had lymph nodes removed, and I just wanted to make people aware that you can get lymphedema anytime. You just because you don't have it after the surgery doesn't mean you will not get it, and I wasn't that aware, so you have to be careful of cutting your arm or hand or for any infection. You can get lymphedema 15 years later. So if you, once you've had those lymph nodes removed, you are susceptible to that. And I just wanted, some people aren't aware of it. Like I wasn't. I thought, oh, good, I don't have lymphedema. I'm good. But you're not. You're always
at
susceptible.
Risk. Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, doctor.
Agree, Marie. In fact, I make it my practice to educate. I think it's important that even though the patient is not manifesting lymphedema immediately after surgery or immediately after radiation, if I, as a doctor, feel that they are at increased risk for that by virtue of the treatment that they receive or their disease, they are almost always sent to a lymphedema specialist for education so that they will know what it looks like and when it happens, where to go and what to do.
Right. Also, my doctor did inform me, and I went to physical therapist. I had to use the LDEX or whatever you call that to measure. But you are in so much overload at that point,
sure.
I didn't absorb all of it, what they were saying. So you can't reiterate it enough to the patient.
Indeed. I totally agree.
Thank you, Marie. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Gary in West Haven, Vermont. Okay, Gary, you're on.
Hi. I'm a lifelong smoker, and I'm 40-plus years into having been heavily exposed to asbestos at a young age. Are there any clear symptoms or tests that would show one way or another?
I would say that with your occupational exposure as well as your smoking history, it is best to sit down with your primary care doctor to talk about screening for you. Certainly, with asbestos, asbestos exposure does increase your risk of developing lung cancer, but also of that special type of lung disease called mesothelioma. So this is something that I think you should sit down with your primary care doctor and talk about if you are concerned about this.
Okay, I did bring it up. And he has seen some cases, but having told him what my experience had been, he did not suggest one way or another that he may have, you know, tests performed or anything. It was just, I'm a little disappointed that there wasn't more to the conversation than what there was.
Bring it up again, Gary, and just tell him that you're concerned, and maybe if he could, and I don't want to put words into his mouth either, too, but maybe if he could look into it a little bit better. But, you know, as doctors, we also have to go by not only your history, but your symptoms at that point in time, if you're having any symptoms that would point us to something happening in the lungs. So based on that and our degree of suspicion and your risk factors, that's when we decide what type of diagnostic study is required.
Okay. Gary, thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Let's go to Mark in Schenectady. All right. Mark in Schenectady, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I have a question about colonoscopy. I'm deathly afraid of the procedure. And I have had one operation where I had a C4 disc removal, and that went rather well, although there were some problems when I was under in relation to the procedure.
Okay, but Mark, we're running out of time, so could you give us the specific question?
My question is, how do I get over the sphere, and can it be done without them having to use, without them having to put me to sleep?
Mark, yes, there is something called virtual colonoscopy, which is more of a radiographic procedure. However, if they do see something there that is of suspicion, then they still have to do the traditional colonoscopy. What I do suggest is that talk to your gastroenterologist or the surgeon who is going to do your procedure and ask if they can assist you with regards to the anxiety associated with that. They will most likely sedate you when the procedure happens, so certainly you wouldn't feel anything or know anything that is happening at that time. So if that doesn't give you enough assurance, I would say talk to them and maybe they could give you some medications to deal with that fear or anxiety about the procedure.
Hey, Mark, I've had four in my life and they're a piece of cake. In fact, I sort of like them. So thanks so much, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Right. Let's go to Lewis in Woodstock. Okay, Lewis, how you doing?
Hey, Alan, how are you? Listen, doctor, could you tell me what is the hemispheric radiation down there at Sloan Kettering? What is that?
I'm not quite sure about what he was referring to with regards to the hemispheric radiation. I'm going to assume that they're talking about arc therapy, wherein instead of the radiation beam being static and delivering the radiation from one to 9 to 10 different angles around the patient's body, that the radiation is that the beam is dynamic, meaning the gantry of the beam the gantry of the machine moves as the radiation moves around the patient as the radiation is being delivered. Therefore, it spreads around the radiation to the body, but then the dose is still concentrated in the area of the tumor.
Hey, Lewis, thanks for calling. I gotta try to get everybody in here. Thank you. Let's go to Pat in Petersburg. Pat in Petersburg, you're on.
Yes. I would like to ask the doctor, where in the Capital District are there lymphedema specialists? It's a subject that's not really addressed that much. You end up going to physical therapists, and a lot of them don't know that much about lymphedema drainage.
Okay, that's a fair question, Pat. And I want to make sure we're sort of getting this thing done. Go ahead.
Pat, I think all the major hospitals, their physical therapy departments are equipped with lymphedema specialists. So I would say go to Albany Med, St. Peter's, Ellis Hospital, Albany Memorial. I think all of those hospitals would have a lymphedema specialist on board.
Okay, thank you, Pat. Let's go to John in Rexford. John, you're on.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay. I can. Thanks, Alan. I have had many tests on PSA. It's present in my family with enlarged prostate, no prostate cancer, but wondered, I've already had one biopsy done that was negative. The question is there a range of PSA now with what they know about it that's safe for men in their 50s.
Okay, John, we're going to have to let it go at that. Doctor, really quickly, because this will have to be the last question. Go ahead.
Yes, John, there's actually an age range and even a race range. The range differs with African Americans as well as Caucasians, and it depends on the age. So there you have to ask your primary care doctor regarding what the range is and the lab values associated with it.
John, I'm so sorry that that's the end of it. I appreciate your call. Let's go, Anna. I just want to also tell Anna of Western Massachusetts that we haven't got time, and we apologize. Next time a little earlier, please. We're out of time. I want to thank Dr. Arcil De Jesus for joining us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Toprasin Natural Medicine Creams, designed to provide relief of gardening aches and pains, sore backs, and poison ivy. Toprasin.com. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues at WAMC.org/Vox Pop. Stay tuned now for a news update.